Fly me to the moon. Let me play among the stars. And let me see what spring is like on Jupiter and Mars. In other words, fly me to the moon. Let me play among the stars. And let me see what spring is like on Jupiter and Mars. In other words, fly me to the moon. Let me play among the stars. And let me see what spring is like on Jupiter and Mars. In other words,
what is the state of logistics moving forward? Definitely is a question that we have to make all the time, because you know what, disruption is part of what we see all the time, but also we need to look at it in a different way. Good morning. This is Coffee Break Logistics and Supply Chain. We are streaming live from the Pacific Ocean, and it's a very exciting conversation today. I would like to invite her for a coffee. This is Coffee Break Logistics Supply Chain, right? And this is the happy hour, and we celebrate happy hour with a coffee. So let me invite my co-host from Canada, and let's have a coffee together and start the conversation. Benita is going to be joining us soon, and there you go. Good morning, Benita. How are you?
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are. It's Benita Lee signing in from Calgary, Alberta, Canada. So I don't have as nice a background as you have today. You can't imagine how clear the picture is on your side. Like, I'm fuzzy compared to you.
Yeah, so we are sailing and we are close to the Long Beach port. As you can see far, I don't know if you can see it.
Yeah, I can see the cranes.
There you go. So those are the cranes. So we decided to come this way just to talk about what is the near future for the logistics and supply chain, what we can weigh, what we can see, what we can, I don't know. Surprises are going to be part of the conversation, definitely. The state of the economy is something that is influencing the actual situation of the logistics and supply chain. As far as I know, it seems to be that we are going to have a friend that is going to be joining us today as well, right?
Right. She's not here yet, so we'll just continue. I mean, when we talk about the state of or the future of supply chain, like, I think it's going to be really exciting. Like, there's not a quarter that goes by that things don't change or something big doesn't happen. Uh-huh. It's just been a real roller coaster, I think, in the last 3-4 years, don't you think?
No question about it. And something that is important to acknowledge is that we see a lot of activity in the political front in many different countries. So due to that, I mean, that is affecting the economy. Therefore, I mean, supply chain and logistics has been affected as well. Believe it or not, it's a year and a half that Russia and Ukraine are having this conflict. And we tend to forget about those things, but this is definitely affecting everything around the world. The tensions between the international trade between China and the US. So No question. There's a lot of reasons why everything is being affected, and I don't think that it's going to be a period in our life that we are going to see everything working 100% perfect without any disruption, which is fine. But it is what it is, right? So, we are getting some
Hold on, hold on there, Jose. We don't want you to, we don't want man overboard.
Yeah, hopefully my fellow sailors are watching me, because myself here, so if I'm gonna be over the board, I mean, forget it. They're gonna realize probably in a couple of hours, which is not that good.
One question. I need to ask an important question, though.
Okay, go ahead.
Can you swim?
I know how to swim. That is correct. Yes.
Okay. Good. That makes me feel 20% better.
I won't say that I'm an expert, but yes, I know how to swim.
Oh, hi, Luz. Luz is on in comments.
My beautiful wife is,
yes,
is saying hello. Yes, so.
Beautiful wife, Luz, is in comments. Tell us where you're from if you're in comments as well and you're watching this. Jose is on the Pacific right now, probably. So, just
and
like.
We are heading to Avalon, Catalina Island, to be more exact.
Oh, very nice. I've dreamt of going to the Catalina Islands, never got there.
Yeah, there's one particular spot that is called Two Harbor, which is very, very quiet, very nice as well. So that's where we are heading to. So let me start reviewing the actual situation in the logistical supply chain. So on the model side, which is the OTR, over the road transportation, definitely we have seen is an increasing capacity. Therefore, is a sharp decline on pricing. And that's basically what we are seeing all the time. When the capacity increases, then the pricing tend to go down. And many shippers are enjoying today the benefit of lower rates. During COVID, I mean, we see everything going sky high. This environment, definitely the pricing is being affected because a lot of capacity available, therefore the pricing is getting lower and lower. Let me show you what we can see. Let me know when you see the vessel that is closing in front of us.
Yeah, I can see a container vessel, it looks like.
Yeah, so we see some ones over there. So this is a small, very small one that is going in front of us, and then that is gonna cause some movement to this vessel here. All right, so the next mode of transportation, which is rail. Rail is something that is getting a lot of favor because it's number one, eco-friendly. Definitely emissions is something that is not comparable with over the road transportation. Some lanes are being opened in ports like Houston port, where basically we start enjoying the benefit to use the rail, especially for something that is far, let's say 30 miles in, to avoid any jams and more traffic for trucks. Oh, Jesus Christ, this is moving a lot.
Slow down. Slow down. We have John. We'll let Jose get steady there, but John Laguda from Calgary. He's on the road now. Thanks for tuning in, John. Jose, our special guest here.
Okay, that's good. That's good. Definitely very good. Let me get this table and you can continue with the conversation.
Yeah. Should I mute you?
Yeah.
Hi, Lorianne, you're on. And I'm just going to unmute your mic, Lorianne. You don't hear anything, or I can't hear you because you have to, I think you have to unmute yourself. So there is on the bottom of the screen, there's a mute, stop cam, settings, present, invite, and leave studio button. So mute is on the far left. I'm going to try to unmute you, but I can't unmute because my guest, their mic isn't connected. Your mic is not connected yet, Lorianne. That's okay. I'll wait for you to maybe sign out and then come back in. And then when it asks you to use your mic, I would just say yes. Maybe. So we have our special guest. We're gonna wait while Lorianne gets her mic working, and Jose and I will just continue to. I've got Lorianne, but her mic is not on, so she really has to go off the mic.
It seems to be that. Let me see. It seems to be that she's not able to listen to us, right?
Well, she's talking, but.
So probably she needs to go out and then come back again.
We can hear you. Yes, we can hear you now.
Okay, great. And then in terms of camera, can you see me at all or no?
Perfect. We can see you. And
okay.
Is that the news? Like where your desk is at the news?
Yeah, I'm at CNBC. Mm-hmm.
Welcome, Lorianne. I really hyped up the fact that you're going to come, so I'm glad you appeared.
Yeah, no, I'm sorry. I was actually talking to sources before this because I have I'm going to be on NBC News now in a couple of hours, so I wanted to get some new information to go on the air with.
Great.
Hey, Lorianne, how are you?
Hi, Jose. How you doing?
Cannot complain. Life is great.
Good.
Thank you for joining us today. So,
yeah, sure.
We were talking about, the state of logistics and supply chain, and definitely this is very, very in your line, right? I mean, you have probably inside information about what's going on in multiple different firms, especially with these labor disputes.
Yeah.
That are going on not only here in the United States but also in Canada now.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah,
the floor is yours.
Yeah, sure. I mean, pretty much from what I'm seeing and what I've been hearing, I've spoken with some folks up in Canada today. I also heard back from the Maritime Association for British Columbia, and they said that they're honoring the media embargo as they're in mediation now. As you know, they came back to the table yesterday. But the big sticking point is what we've seen throughout the world is, the fair wage, right? Ocean carriers, terminals made historic profits and they want a piece of the pie. They worked during COVID and they would like to get their just desserts. What they want and what they get, of course, are going to be, two totally different things. With what you're looking at here, according to Ashton, who's the president of the ILWU in Canada, in that statement, he says, they haven't even brought it up, right, in terms of, a fair wage, as well as automation. The thing that I'm kind of keeping an eye out on that wasn't really picked up, I wrote about it briefly in my article on CNBC, is the fact that you have the ILA, and that's the largest labor union in North America, and they're standing with the union for the ILWU of Canada, saying they're not going to move any cargo that is diverted. And so when you look at the ILA and you look at the tangible points, of course, it's all the East Coast and the Gulf ports, but it's also the inland ports. It's also the Great Lakes. You know, when people forget that there are ports within, you know, inland, if you will, right, when it comes to the tributaries. And so that's something that can give you pause. But when I was speaking with the ILA earlier, I asked them if they've heard of any diversions yet from the vessels. And marine traffic said they have not seen any diversions yet from British Columbia down to Seattle, Tacoma. And maybe, you know, they might be waiting until tomorrow, of course. But the ILA told me they can't find out if a vessel's been diverted. So then I replied back and I said, well, how do you know then if something's been diverted or not? Because remember, they said they're not going to move any traffic, any cargo that's diverted. So if you don't know what vessels have been diverted, how do you know if the vessel that's coming in is a diverted vessel? Unless, of course, it was just added to the schedule, which is what I asked them. So, you know, it's really interesting. It's, you know, when it comes to the logistics portion of this, and for those that aren't familiar with the Canadian law, and Benita, of course, you know, you are, you know, end all be all, you know, people don't realize that they have, well, no, please, but you know about the 72-hour rule. And a lot of people say, oh, the union gave us time to move stuff. I said, no, they have to by Canadian law, that they have to announce the strike. What's interesting is the timing of the strike, right? You know, it's Canada Day. And so, you know, folks are off today. They're off tomorrow. So you and I both know that the volumes of trade that's coming in will be less. That's very similar to what we saw with the strategy of the ILWU as it relates to, you know, the West Coast ports and the timing, if you will, of their slowdowns, right? I mean, although their slowdowns were a hot mess and, you know, it took a while to clear up. But from what I've been told, at least with some of the logistics managers that I've spoken with, and so these are some of the smaller guys. So you kind of do the and so on effect, right, when it comes to the bigger peeps. So I was told that one of my contacts, they moved 150% more capacity in the last 3 days and they prioritized the containers. And so for those folks that are, you know, listening right now, when the longshoremen go bye-bye tomorrow at 8 a.m. Pacific time, that means that trains can't move. Because you have specialized longshoremen that run the rails. And that's something similar to what you saw with the embargo that Union Pacific did for the West Coast, remember, for that one day, because they didn't have enough specialized workmen to move the containers, right?
Right.
So what's happening is these truckers, these logistics companies have gone in, they have prioritized whatever containerized rail traffic, okay, that was going to come on. They have taken those containers out of the port and they are transloading and they are physically unloading these containers and loading the products onto trucks.
Interesting.
That's what they're doing right now so they could help move the flow of trade. And so the stuff that's being moved now will technically get here. What we need to look at is the time frame and the length of any type of strike. Okay. So if folks have moved, say 100% of cargo, okay.
Okay.
Or whatever. So, you know, stuff is going to be moving for the next couple of weeks. But if they do strike and they strike, because remember, here in the United States, we have July 4th, right? On Tuesday, Monday, some people are like half working, they're half not, whatever, so be it. You have to look at the tsunami of the containers that are going to build up out of Vancouver and Prince Rupert, okay? Yeah. That are going to travel by CN and travel by Canadian Pacific and head to Chicago and Detroit. They are going to get clogged fast. And you and I both know, what does that mean? Detention and demurrage.
Right. So
those products, and a lot of them are going to be holiday items, they are going to be sitting at that port. I have been told that there is a fear of lack of ocean freight chassis, right, from on the inland side to see if they can get these containers. Because they're now moving stuff, their equipment, from Indianapolis into Detroit and into Chicago to kind of thwart any type of equipment shortage. And so it's really beneficial for anybody, if there's any shippers out there, and hopefully they've done this, talk to your 3PLs, talk to whoever is moving your product and ask them, what the hell are you doing? And mm-hmm. also too, is your product a priority? If it's not, so be it, you know, then right. it's fine. Yeah. You don't have to worry. But if you are a priority, you know, the clock literally is ticking right now to get your stuff out of those ports and into another area, because honestly, it is faster. When you look at the rail system, Canadian Pacific, I've been told that Canadian Pacific and CN are far more efficient than UPN, by far, when it comes to Seattle and Tacoma.
In terms of what?
Yeah.
In terms of efficient, as in just getting things moving and having things, is it because they have less volume? Or
I think it depends. It just depends. A lot of times it depends on efficiency. I mean, let's be real. Look at LA and Long Beach. They've had far less stuff and they still suck. So, it doesn't matter. It depends on the quality of the people that are working at those ports to move the product. You know, if you're not motivated, like, and you saw firsthand, the longshoremen were not incentivized to work.
Right.
You know, and also too, they're still negotiating. They're still looking at that deal right now. So you're only as good as the people that are working at those ports and at the terminals. And also when it comes to your own 3PL, do they have peel piles? What is the strategy that you have in order to really move this stuff? Because as of tomorrow at 8 a.m. Pacific, everything stops. And so, that's the key thing. But when you look at the efficiency, a lot of people choose Vancouver because traditionally it's one of the first ports from the Trans-Pacific to the West Coast.
Right.
And so if you want to move the cheaper chicken, which is train, you're going to go to Vancouver to use CN or Canadian Pacific to go to Detroit or to go to Chicago. You're not going to go to Seattle, Tacoma, because it's slower.
Right. And that's just talking inbound. Like, I know that a lot of, like fertilizer and critical commodities are exported from Prince Rupert.
Yes. Now, when it comes to grain, I do have some new information. Because I wanted to get it. Let me pull it up real quick so I don't misspeak.
Yeah.
So I asked the Office of the Ministry of Transport for Canada, saying, listen, is it indeed true that grain has to continue to move per the code, the labor code of Canada? And they sent me an email and they said, yes. They said, absolutely, yes. Grain has to move. So from an ag standpoint, it's not like in the U.S. where it's like the cheaper chicken and they always get like passed over, right? Mm-hmm. When it comes to grain exports or grain imports, it has to move.
Okay, that's good to know. And I think you're right. And in terms of fertilizer that supports, the growing of grain, I think they've piggybacked on that legislation. So that's good to know, at least, but when you talk about things moving in from Vancouver and then going get down to Chicago, are we talking like car parts and?
Yeah, critical parts that are critical to making tires, to completing cars, brakes, steering wheels, ball bearings, the steel that goes to the inside of a tire. All of those items are brought over from the Trans-Pacific and go in there, and they're moved by rail. Also, when you look at, I spoke with the National Retail Federation about this, you look at the sweaters, the items, the holiday items. Holiday starts coming in now. It starts coming in now. And so you all have, it's like all this pecking order in terms of everything that, that's coming in their way. So you have the soft commodity items, but you have the manufacturing components, the tractor components, the trailer components, all of that that Detroit needs in order to complete a product.
Right. And okay, like, Lurie, farmers can't wait.
I have a question.
Sure.
Lorian, I have a question. And this is probably for the VCOs that you always hear this repetitive question. Is there any way to prevent this? I mean, I know that is very difficult, but everyone is asking, I mean, is there any way to foresee that this is going to be taking place and you're going to experience delays and when all these labor disputes are taking place in all these ports? We know that here in Southern California, basically, we know the deadline when they are going to go into negotiations. But it is exactly the same thing in Canada as well. It's different.
You know, you broke up a lot, Benita. Were you able to make it out better than I could?
Something about the, Jose's on the water today, so. Something about, like, the BCOs and.
What it was, if we can prevent.
I think you're trying to draw comparison and parallels between the U.S. strike, threat of strike, and the Canadian ones, like, are the retailers and the
like, are people freaking out? Yes. Yeah, the National Retail Federation, I sent them an email, the head of trade for NRF, and within a half hour I got a statement. Oh. The American Apparel Footwear Association, they're sending me a statement again. A lot of these products do come through Vancouver and Prince Rupert. Like I said, because you need redundancy within your supply chain to move things in. And so Vancouver and Prince Rupert were also a great way of avoiding the ILWU slowdowns and the hot mess. And so if you're going to use rail, which is cheaper, right, that those rail, their turnaround times are a lot faster than LA and Long Beach. And so if you're able to get off the first neck, right, of the supply chain, right, the trade route, if you're able to get off the first stop and get off at a better train station, wouldn't you? So that's the reason why. That's why it was like the first choice. What will happen is, and what I'm waiting on is, if there is indeed any trade diversion, it will go to Seattle and Tacoma. That's where it'll automatically go, because it's the next closest. You know, so yeah. So that'll be interesting to see what happens.
Yeah, like when it comes to that West Coast, there's a huge reliance on and a huge like collaboration that needs to happen between Canada and the US. Mm-hmm. We never really think about that, but
yeah,
these strikes are showing us that.
Yeah.
Fourth strike. Lorianne, can I switch the topic?
Sure.
First of all, is there anything else you'd like to say about the situation?
Not really. I mean, it's just that the longer that it goes, I've been told that if it goes until Wednesday of next week, it'll really hit the supply chains here in the United States. Because, you know, it's a lighter time right now. But once people start going back to work and things like that, it'll be because you get more of a backlog. Right. So remember the hairball of trade? The hairball is going to get bigger.
Right.
And so once that hairball is finally able to be released, you're going to have a lot of baby hairballs to contend with.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good luck, everyone.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. It's like, that one's too hairy. I don't want to touch it.
Yeah, exactly. Literally. You're going to be running away. Hair clippers.
I wanted to ask you, recently, I saw a post that you're writing a book with your daughter.
Yes.
I want to hear a little bit about that, if it's all right.
Yeah, sure. No worries. And, you know, so we started a nonprofit. It's called Embracing Your Past to Empower Your Future. And so my daughter is 17 now. We started writing the book about 3 years ago. And so we were able to tour the homes of former presidents, George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, and James Madison. And during the tours, we saw bricks that were made by the enslaved. And the slaves actually put their fingerprints into the bricks. And the enslaved that made the homes put the intention of making sure those fingerprints were put out so the world can see them.
Wow.
And so, you know, when you look at U.S. history and when you go to the homes of the presidents, you learn a little bit about the enslaved, but you don't know a lot about them, their people. And so we decided, let's try to find descendants of the enslaved so we can tell their story. because unfortunately, when it comes to the enslaved, it's what I call the famous enslaved, Sally Hemings, who had the relationship with Thomas Jefferson. I mean, they were essentially husband and wife. I mean, they truly loved each other. Then you had, you know, James Madison, you know, and all these other individuals that, you know, had relations with slaves and produced offspring. And so what happened is we started reaching out to the Black community, and we found four wonderful families whose loved ones were enslaved. And so we interviewed one of the descendants from the Clotilda, and the Clotilda was the last slave ship that was brought in 1860. It was brought in illegally, 50 years after the Constitution amendment that said it's illegal to bring in slaves. And so 110 men and women were brought in. After they were emancipated, they created a town called Africa Town, and it's based in Alabama, and it's still there. And so we interviewed them. And what's interesting is that you can hear about the Middle Passage, and the Middle Passage is the route that the slaves were put on ships. And people didn't know how horrible the trip was, because it was very, very bad, because all the people died. You know, they were brought in the 1600s, 1700s. And with this, they were built in the early, you know, they were brought in 1850 or 1860 rather. And so, you know, so we talked to them, and we created a nonprofit because we want to raise funds to publish the book. I'm an author. My agent went to the publishers, and they did not want to publish a book about four Black families descended from slaves.
Interesting.
They only wanted to do a snippet of a life of a Black family, and that's wrong. And we are not going to go back to these families and say your story doesn't count. And so we created the nonprofit for twofold to raise funds to publish the book, and all of the royalties anyway for the book. Any donations, they're going to go to a fund that we have set up for any descendants of enslaved going to college, that we're going to give you book stipends.
And so
that way it's legit. It's just literally like all the funds go towards this. And I really hope that once the book comes out, because we're hoping it comes out for Black History Month of 2024, that more families come out. You know, and we were able to find, you know, new information of these families. But we also worked with Monticello, which is the home of James Madison, and Mount Vernon, the home of George Washington. And we worked with the historians to make sure that everything that we had was factual, correct. And it is. So yeah. that's
knowing
the story.
You, yeah, there's been some really hard research.
Yeah.
And starting from fingerprints. Wow.
Yeah. And so if you go to my web, it's called Empowering Your Past. Empowering Your Past. Let me look. I'm a new nonprofit, so I don't want to make sure that I'm giving you the right.
Yeah, exactly. I want to share with the audience in case they want to continue.
It's called embracingyourpast.net. And you know, thank God for LegalZoom. So, you know, I got that going, and so the nonprofit is up and running, and, you know, we're actively, you know, seeking the funds so we can tell the story. And I'm just really excited because the four families are the Quander family, which is, they date back, their history dates back, to the 1600s. They're the longest living family. And then you have the Brooks family, which is the only Black American family that has three generals in the immediate family, so a father and two sons. And then I have the James Madison family, who are they are descended by James Madison, and it is not contested. And then, of course, the Clotilda family. And
I know a lot of people are going to be really interested in this.
Yeah.
Research and the book that comes from it. Oh my goodness. Yeah, it gives me a little bit of goosebumps.
They've done so much for society. Like, every generation has given back. And the main message for all the griots and griots, and that's the African term for storyteller, for the family, it's always, and it's so inspirational, carry somebody on your shoulders in your journey. Bring those with you. contribute to society and take education, because you have to be twice as good as the next person in order to achieve success.
Right.
You know, and so, and anybody from it, and that can be relatable to anybody.
Yeah.
You know, it's a universal message, and that's what they want. They were like, we don't care if, you know, white, Asian, Indian, whatever folks read the book. We want people to be inspired by what we have, our loved ones have done, and what we are doing, you know, for the future.
I love it.
Lorianne, can you tell us the experience? I mean, what is the experience? How do you feel working with your daughter?
It's
working on this project.
You know, it's really cool because, like, Abby, that's my daughter's name. She, like, we're like, I don't know, she's my baby girlfriend. I love her to pieces. She loves history. And, you know, she wanted to make a difference. And she's an advanced placement student in English and history. So this is right up her alley. And so she's like, Mom, people need to learn about the Clotilda in high school. Mom, you know, and then she was actually telling her history teacher about one of the Quanders, who was a huge women's suffragist, and that she was in the March for Washington. And so she's like, Mommy, you know, people need to know this. And then, and this is an intentional part of the book, she asks all these individuals. And so you and I both know, when we talk as adults, we talk in a certain way, we answer in a certain way. But when you talk to a teenager, your answers are a little bit different. They're a little bit softer, might be a little bit more thoughtful, right? Abby asked all of them and said, what piece of advice do you have for somebody like me? And oh my gosh, I'm getting goosebumps now just thinking of what they gave her. And we end each family portion of the book with that question. Like, so the answer that they gave her is the intentional way that we're ending their story, because it's all about being the best that you can be, taking every advantage that you can get, and make the opportunities. You know, you have to create opportunities. It's just like logistics. You create opportunities. You have to be nimble. You have to be able to pivot. And when you look at these individuals, and Abby has just grown so much, and she's just like, Mom, I just hope other people, you know, when they read this book, they get it. But to tell my daughter that publishers did not care, like, she cried. She's like, Mommy, she's like, what, you know, we've worked so hard on this. And I said, our mission is to get the book done, and we will do it. You know, so.
And for sure, you guys are going to make it. I mean, that's for sure.
I hope so.
Share with us all the information that is needed. I mean, just to support that project. I mean, that's something that definitely we can do.
Thank you so much. I'll send you both. I'll message Benita. I'll email you on LinkedIn. And then Jose, I'll send you on the link. And like, the website is pretty self-explanatory, but I could also send like the marketing material that we sent, which shows you, you know, what we have, a sample chapter of the book. The book is pretty much, I'm finishing up the Clotilda chapter now, so to speak, but it's unreal, because there's light in the darkness.
Yeah, I mean, we've all heard about the Mayfair, but we've never heard about the Clotilda.
Yeah, no, exactly. Mm-hmm. And it's still here. They found it. It's in the river in Alabama. They found it.
Wow.
And so I'm waiting to hear back from the state of Alabama to see if they're going to raise it, because they got $20 million in funds. Wow. And you literally can see it. Like, it blows your mind. It blows your mind. You could literally, because it's not, and part of it's sticking out of the water, because, you know, the river levels are so low,
right.
You can see it. And they burnt it down. And I put a portion in my book where one of the captain burned it, because it was illegal, right, to bring them in, but they didn't want to have any evidence of human trafficking. And they had to burn the ship because of all the human feces that were in the hull of the ship.
Interesting.
Because, yeah. There were no restrooms.
Right.
And so and they hid them in a mosquito infested swamp. Wow. And then they sold them off. Yeah.
Trade stories as old as time.
Yeah. Yeah. It's pretty crazy. But with the Africa town, I want to go. So the town was based on the principles of Africa. And so the way that they built the town, it was a sharing community. And what happened, unfortunately, was there was a lot of the state of Alabama and the city of Mobile took the land and they built a gigantic freeway in the center of the town, and they essentially have killed the town. So the town is now trying to regroup. But they went through and they destroyed all the homes of all the co-founders. And so it's kind of sad to see that the struggle, right? And the inequity is still there. It's still there, the inequity.
I can't wait to follow this project. Can just one more question, and I'm asking it out of out of context of our last conversation, but this episode we were talking about disruptions and the future of trade. Like, if you had a crystal ball, you had a crystal ball, Lorianne, what would you, what advice would you give, you know, us, like supply people, logistics people?
I in all honesty, I think the biggest piece of advice is to go to your customer and show how you can be two steps ahead, or how when you're looking at a situation, the proactive measures that you're doing and what you are doing. The more than you could explain and take out the uncertainty and give more facts, I think the customer will care and will stick with you. Or, you know, tell somebody, oh, yeah, I already knew about that. Yeah, my, you know, we got the alert on, you know, what's going on in Vancouver and blah, blah, blah. And this is what they're doing, you know, and this is what they're doing in 2 weeks from now. Like ITS Logistics, Paul Brashear, he was telling me they already have a 3 week plan. They have a 3 week plan already in place for the Vancouver strike or the all the ports, you know, for the 30 ports. So I think it comes to being nimble and really communicating, because it really shouldn't be that mystical, right? A lot of people are so afraid of sharing their intellectual property and their data or whatever. But if you're a beacon of light, because you're diffusing that darkness in terms of the lack of knowledge and the lack of info, I think the stronger you are. Because it's all about utilizing the technology. Like, yeah, because everyone says, oh, we've got this great technology. Well, that's great. What do you do with it? You know, showcase the technology. This is what we're doing. This is what we're hearing. And be proactive. Hey, listen, just want to get it out there. Not being a worry wart, but hey, listen, in 72 hours, there could be a strike in Vancouver. And, you know, if you do have, you know, critical materials or whatever, please flag it to me or whatever. You know, it's that constant communication. Like I said, you know, one place, they moved 150% of containers in 3 days.
Wow.
You know,
this is Vancouver, Prince Rupert?
Prince Rupert, those two. Yeah. Okay. Out of those two. I mean, there's 30 ports in general in Canada on the West Coast that are going to shut down. But I say, like, to me, that's the most disruptive thing. I think it's communication. The better you are at communicating, the more disruptive you'll be, because you're able to connect the dots.
Right.
And the actionability. The more actionable you can be, the better it is. If you're able to move that container and avoid detention and demurrage, amen. You know, you don't want to look like you're behind the eight ball. You want to be driving. Like, you don't want to be, like, I don't care. Like, when I go out and I declare that things are open or closed, whatever, I use data, right? You know that. Mm-hmm. And the same thing for logistics companies. If you hear that, you know, there's going to be a port closure, you get out there and you send out a customer alert. Just so you know, this is what's happening. We're keeping an eye out on it. It could be something as simple as that. That's disruptive, because what's going to happen is they're using you and they're using other logistics companies, right? You know that everybody uses others. They're going to then think of, why the hell isn't this other guy telling me? You know what I mean? So it's something as simple as that, you know? It's something as simple as that. That's what and keep them on your website. I just did a piece with the Baltimore ports, and we were talking about the productivity, their turn times for the trucking. And I said, oh, where is it? She goes, oh, you need to go to this website. We have a link. I said, no. I don't want to go to another website. I want it on your website. Like, why don't you have it on your website? Like, and they couldn't get it through their head. Oh. Don't farm out. Bring it in. How's it in?
Well, wait till you hear about, like, Canadian media and Google. Did you hear about that?
I've been, like, in a silo with stuff, so okay. If you can tell me.
So this was last night. I heard on the National. that Google, Canadian media wants Google to pay to, you know, list their media sites to get Canadian news. And Google basically said, no, no, you pay us to get, you know,
the better placement.
Right. Mm-hmm. And so there's been an argument, and it could leave Canadian news like not Googleable.
Oh my God.
If that's a word. That's,
yeah, no, you know, it should be a word. That's crazy. That's crazy town.
Yeah. So
that's something. Wow.
Tell us about what you're going to talk about on NBC, if you can.
Yeah, sure. So I'm on NBC News now at 3:24 Eastern time, PM Eastern today, just kind of giving an update as to, you know, what's going on, what kind of items go, like why you should care.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's pretty much it.
I wonder if I'll be able to catch that. I don't know if I get these channels in Canada anymore.
I don't know. In all honesty, I don't know.
Yeah.
I know I'm no help.
Yeah. I can't get certain channels now that I'm in Canada again.
Oh, goodness.
Yeah, when you're talking about the Great Lakes and how nobody thinks about that, I lived in Duluth for a year there, so I totally get it.
Yeah. No, it's crazy. A lot of people just think, oh, ports. Well, yeah, you know, the Great Lakes are, you know, they transport trade. So, you know, rivers, they transport trade. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, how all this goes.
Okay. I'm getting word from Jose that he may need to drop because there's heavy waves.
Oh, geez. Okay.
He's on his way to the Catalina Islands.
Oh, that's nice.
I know. I wish
wish I was there.
Yeah, me too. Well, we've kind of got North America and triangulated because you're on the East Coast.
Mm-hmm.
Jose's on the West Coast, and then I'm on the Canadian Rocky Mountains.
Oh, very cool. Very, very cool.
Yeah. If you need to drop, just let me know.
Yeah, sure. Otherwise, does anybody have any questions for me? Or because I can jet if I don't want to take up too much of your guys' time.
Here is a question. When you were talking about somebody from Germany is on, and I think when you were talking about the boat that sank, that they sank because of
the Clotilde. Mm-hmm.
The Clotilde.
Yeah.
I think they're asking, do you have a picture of it?
I do. How do I share?
Okay. Do you see the present button where I found the mute stop cam settings?
Hold on.
At the band at the bottom, there's a present button.
Oh, there is? Okay, hold on. Why is this not? Oh, here it is. Okay.
It's much like Zoom or Teams.
Okay. So I can just share the screen?
Yeah, you can present and then share screen.
Okay, yeah. Let me... how do I do this?
This is going to be really interesting. Thanks for asking. I can't see who you are from Germany. If you could write down your name so I can thank you for engaging.
Okay. Am I sharing?
Not yet. I'll tell you when it's up and then I'll bring it up. You have to present and then it'll say share screen, and then you'll share your screen, and then you'll pick which tab you want.
Okay. All right. I want to do, oh, here it is. Okay. Okay.
Oh,
do you see it? Okay. So I'm just going to hold on. You might get nauseous, so you might want to close your eyes. I just have to find it. All right.
Okay. I'm not going to put it on screen until you find it.
Oh, okay, great. All right, let me.
Okay. The questions are coming in now.
Okay, you can share it.
Okay, here we go. We're going to share a picture of the Clotilde. Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Huge decomposition scene there.
Mm-hmm. And you can see she's pretty much all together. So the human trafficker / enslaver, because it was the reason why they were brought over was the Mr. Mayor, That's his name. He bet somebody in a poker game that he could bring over slaves illegally. And so that's what happened. And so he won the bet. He won the bet. And so there were 110 of them on that vessel that you see there. And actually, the vessel is a little bit bigger than what they thought it would be.
Oh, really?
And so, yeah. And so I'm hoping that the state of Alabama raises it, because it'll be the only vessel ever raised in the United States. And it's like the only wreck ever found.
And would you and Abby go to the raising? I mean, that would be kind
of... I would love to. Like, I personally want to go to... I'm going to try to go to Africatown myself, because I don't know if Abby can go. She's a camp counselor. So, I don't know if she has, like, if she could take off. but I want to go so I can meet with Vernetta. And so she's the great-granddaughter of Poli Allen, who is one of the co-founders of Africatown and one of the Clotilda survivors. And so I just want to meet with her because she's 80. And a lot of these people that we spoke with, you know, they're older. And so that's what makes it even more dire to have this book out. And so it's going to cost about $15,000 to publish the book.
Okay.
And that's a lot of money. So it's a lot of money. And so,
I'm going to do everything you can to support and raise awareness. And, you know, we have Christoph here from Germany. He does a show that is also part of Coffee Break Logistics and Supply Chain, and it's called The Joy of Logistics.
Oh.
He's in Stuttgart, Germany.
Okay.
But he can usually work it so that it's like about this time in America.
Sure.
Lorianne LaRocco, would you join me on an episode of Joy of Logistics? Would be great having you as a guest. So I'll put you in touch with Christoph. Yeah,
that'd be great. Do you want me to stop sharing?
I stopped sharing for you.
Oh, okay, great. Thank you.
Yeah, by the way, you got the most Word documents on your background I've ever seen.
And that's just a fraction. That's for the book. That's for the book. So, and I actually have two folders going on now, because I've moved it where we interviewed other families that are not going to be in the book. So I moved them out of that folder and I put it in like another folder. So yeah, a lot of stuff, a lot of stuff. I've researched more historical documents than I have ever in my entire life. And it just makes me so happy that, oh yeah. And I actually found stuff.
More than for your work.
Yeah. Oh yeah. By far.
And for your other books, like, besides Trade War, there were other books.
Oh yeah. I mean, like when it came to even like Dynasties of the Sea, when I had to research the histories of the families, I did it, but nothing like this, because it's so hard because they were enslaved. And so
you're not going to find those manifests, right?
You will find the manifests if you can, based on the enslavers. But what I did was after that, you could also find out like through census, through marriage documents, photos. And so I was able to get the marriage certificate of Poe Lee and his wife, Rose. Now, mind you, they were, quote, married in 1880, but they already had five kids, because realistically they were married many years prior, right? It's just that they were black and they were not recognized, right, until a certain age, until in slavery, emancipation and all of that. So it's interesting to see the data, but folks are so thankful. And like, even like with the James Madison family, they really have everything. They have like a box and they carry everything and they've got it in a box. And I found out going through all these different documents and finding like historical markers of like things that happened when they moved. And I found that it was the first first constitutional convention of Texas where blacks were able to go.
Okay.
And so I was like, oh, that's interesting. And so I start doing research and, you know, going down my rabbit hole of data. And I find out that one of the Madison descendants was there. And he was an assistant to the five delegates that were allowed to be at that convention.
Wow.
And that bookmarked a 50-year difference between the great-great-grandfather, James Madison,
right,
with the Constitution.
Interesting.
So it's fascinating, you know, to see, I got goosebumps, and it's like, it's just crazy, you
I
know,
didn't
and you
hear
see
about
all
it.
this stuff and you know, the contributions of what they did, and it's like, geez Louise. And so then I started looking up my own, you know, history to see where I came from. And I'm Italian. And so, you know, I came here, I'm third generation. So I'm fairly new compared to most.
Okay.
But it's interesting to see, you know, the humble beginnings. I can't I, my I don't know, my great great uncle or whatever it would be, he sold fruit in New York City.
Okay.
You know, that was his job. You know, here I
Right.
am, and here I am.
Yeah, like
So
it sounds like what you're doing is like piecing together for these families what,
yeah.
you know, what we do on whatchamacallit Ancestry.
Yeah.
What is it called?
Yeah, it's ancestry.com, family chart. I
Ancestry.
like a heritage.com is better. I love it. I just love it, and just to find all this stuff, and then to tell them, oh no, and then they found out the name of somebody that passed away that they didn't know of, and you know, so it also completes their history, you know.
Right.
And so to me, I think journalism, with what I do, no matter what I do, it's about providing that information, right, that you can use,
Yeah.
and that also institutes what we do with our life, right?
Totally.
And so to me, it's just an extension of this, and also to make the world a little bit better, right? If we can inspire one person, then I've done my job. I know it sounds kind of Pollyannish, but
No,
you
it's
know, but I get
true.
up at like 4 o'clock in the morning to
I
write the book, and my
know.
husband thinks I'm nuts. And I'm not even making money, you know, off the book. You know, it's not like, you know, it's not like I'm getting any money. And I'm like, no, but I just get jazzed because I'm helping people.
Right. Well, not off this one, but you know,
Yeah,
there's also
but it doesn't
trade
matter.
war.
Exactly. I got
Yeah.
trade war, and I've got my all the. Listen, you don't get rich by writing books. You don't.
Yeah, you told me that once. You're like, unless you're
Yeah,
John Grisham.
and just a John Grisham. You have to write because you love it. I am going to write. I do have a new trade book that I'm mulling over that I want to write, but I got to
Ooh.
do it. I got to do it after I'm done with this one because
Right.
I got to get to
Absolutely.
the finish line. But yeah,
I'm
but just to like have
excited.
a nonprofit where you could help others. You know, I mean. I don't
Yes.
know. I'm a goober. I don't know. I just like to help people.
I can't wait. You always help me. You help the audience here. I remember when you came to book club, like wow. It's been so great to have you. There you go, folks. You have it from Lorianne LaRocco from CNBC. She and you're in the NBC studio. Freight Waves. And she now has a nonprofit that we're all going to find out about. We're going to get the links and then we're going to share that with you.
Yeah, let me
Thank
share if I can. Let me share. Can you share real quick
Yes,
again?
let's do
Because
it.
I'm going to show you what the website is. I'm very proud of myself because I am not techno I'm not a technical person. So let
Well,
me
let
see
me
here.
Oh,
Oh, that oh, hold on.
that's surprising.
And so I did this. And so the people that you see are the family members, are some of the family members. Do you see it?
Yes,
And
I
so
do. I
this
remember
person
seeing
right
your
here,
clothes. Okay.
this is Poli. He's
Oh,
a
he
he's
might
a
be related to
from
me.
the, so
Does he
Poli
spell
Allen,
it?
Poli.
Okay,
Well,
got it.
his African name was Kapoli, and so he
Oh.
Americanized it, and so he's a Clotilda survivor. He's a
Interesting.
descendant of James Madison. Same thing here.
Wow.
Here we have a women suffragist from the Quandre family. This is the Brooks family, and this is Leo Brooks Sr., and that's his wife Naomi. And so this also is one of the Madisons, and she was the oldest and the only, and like the first Black American ever documented in the state of Texas. And so, and then here, look, here are the fingerprints.
Oh
How can you not? Look at this. How can you not?
my gosh.
How can you not?
I
Look at that.
wish
How can you not want to tell their story?
I wish I had looked closer at these like houses I'd seen in the past in like Louisiana.
Oh,
I had looked.
I'm sure they're there. I'm sure
Yeah.
they are there.
So
And once you see them,
interesting.
you can't unsee them.
That's right.
You can't unsee them. And we saw them everywhere. This is just some of the ones that we put in. But if you think of the intention, they put their fingerprints in. And the folks that made the bricks were children and women.
Right.
So you're looking at, like, that's probably a kid.
Right. They're little.
Little tiny fingerprints. And so.
What's that quote you said there?
This quote?
Yes.
Embracing your past to empower your future. Because that's also the name of the book.
Right.
And so, you know, when you look at this and then you look at the intention, these bricks here, this is from James Madison's house. These are from Monticello, Thomas Jefferson's house.
Interesting.
And so they intended to put those bricks out forward. They could have put those bricks backwards and you wouldn't see them.
I totally want to go on those tours now.
Yeah.
If you guys are in the area, you should. John Y. Ford, he is in, I think, Philadelphia, or was it Pennsylvania? Pennsylvania.
Okay.
So he's got easy access to these places.
Oh, yeah. And if you go to Montpelier, James Madison's place, they by far showed you. And they pointed out, like, here are the fingerprints. Monticello did. I had private tours, but we actually pointed them out before the person showed us, because Abby and I already saw them. Mount Vernon, you will not see them, because George Washington wanted his house to look like limestone bricks. So they actually put a lime wash with sand over the bricks to cover them.
Oh, it's interesting.
So you won't be able to see them. But yeah, so.
But Thomas Jefferson, like, he's the one that.
You can.
He was like the architect's president, right?
Yeah. And you do see like at the Smithsonian in DC,
right.
You do see fingerprints from slaves. You can find them in the homes, and in Washington's house was, and I'm sorry, the White House rather, was built by slaves. So
wow.
You will, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Did not know that either.
Yeah. Sure. That's why when you look at Michelle Obama, she said it was so profound for her as a Black woman to be living in a house that was once built by slaves.
Oh my gosh. That gives me tingling sensations as well.
Yeah.
And that she pointed that out.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Thank you, Michelle Obama.
Yep. Yeah. So this is it.
Thank you so much, Lorianne. You have no idea how grateful we are for you taking part of some of your time out to talk about your book that's coming up, the nonprofit, what's happening on the coast with the strikes. So fun to be in your newsroom.
Yeah, let me see.
Oh, wow. Cool.
And then if I go this way, you'll see there's the studio and there's the wall.
Oh, my goodness. So we have Lorianne in our StreamYard studio, in the CNBC studio.
Exactly. The studio and the studio. It's like the pipelines of trade. We're all connected.
That's right. Thank you so much, Lorianne. We'll talk to you soon. And please share those links with me so that I can reshare them.
Thank you so much. You guys have a wonderful day.
We will. Thank you.
Right. Bye, everybody.
Bye. There you have it, guys. Wasn't that awesome?